Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet land. This is John Stanko, your host for another episode of Wake Up to Purpose. And we have a repeat guest with us who will be coming on in a few minutes, Father Michael Pacella, my longtime friend, who... when we talked a few weeks ago, the world has changed since we talked, and so we do want to chat today about his burden and the practical training that he gives to military personnel and law enforcement officers around the issue of ethics. And the principle or the concept is that ethics can be taught, and I fully concur, and so I think this is quite relevant, and so we want to bring Father Michael back on and drill down a little deeper than we did last time into not only his book, From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave, but also the training that he does, and perhaps some of the results that he's seen, and some of the hopes that he has for the future. I hope you are doing well wherever you are. The day that we are broadcasting and recording this, I'm looking out my window at an absolutely gorgeous day, and I did a Facebook Live earlier in the morning and of this day, and just was sharing how I had this sense today that I get every now and then that I am doing what it is that I am supposed to do, where I'm supposed to be doing it, and with the people that I'm supposed to be doing it with. And it's just like a warm presence comes over my being, and I had that feeling today. And so I, apart from a morning walk and an afternoon break and a quick nap, I'm at my desk and I'm responding to people and requests for help and then doing a lot of editing. And I just, before we came on the air, I'm editing a third book from one of our authors. This one is called More Than Faith. His last book was Faith, the Currency of the Kingdom, and before that was Kingdom Finances. And this is his journey into 2 Peter 1. To see that for our faith to be all that it can be, there are some things we have to add to it. So I've been editing that, editing a book for a young teacher in Wichita, Kansas, his first year teaching experience. He had quite a successful year. I interviewed his principal and his mentor, and they're going to be included in the book. And they tell just what an exceptional job this young man does. So I've been working on that. It's called Rookie Rules. And rookie rules, like he's coming up with an educational philosophy, but this year the rookie is rules. He's really taken the students from very low proficiency to their grade level and beyond. So he wanted to tell his story. Met earlier by Zoom with my co-author. We collaborated on a second book. Our first one was Leadership Carol, a classic tale for modern leaders. And now Dr. Jim Dittnamar and I are doing the Leaders Model, LEADERS, and it's the acronym for the elements we believe that need to be present for effective leadership. And so we should have that in 2 weeks, ready to go off to production. And then I'm editing a book for another one of our authors. This is her second book. The title of this one is When I First Saw the Sea. And this young lady is just remarkable. She has 5 children, one on the way, but she writes, and she's super mom and exercises. And so we're in the midst of that, trying to get as much done as we can before the baby comes. And then I got back the manuscript, the laid out manuscript for my next book, Don't Read This Book. Don't read this book, with an asterisk that says unless you want to become a more effective leader. So that's my day, and I love it. But now I get to do something else I love, and that is giving someone who is flowing and functioning in their purpose an opportunity to to tell their story so that you, the listener, can be challenged. You, the listener, can have something in front of you to say, okay, I see how he did this, and maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that. And you take the principle, the general principles, and you apply them to your own purpose quest. Next week, I am going to switch up radio. I think I'm going to cut back to 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, we'll still do a 5 o'clock broadcast, but then from then on, I'm going to try and do it at noon. I think it gives those in Africa and England a better chance to listen to it live. Also, it gives me more of my day where I can do uninterrupted writing and editing. So I'm looking forward to changing up and seeing how that goes next week. So I'll do 3 Facebook Lives, and then I'll turn Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then I'll turn it right around and we'll do blog radio. So that's coming up next week. Also, my app, if you haven't downloaded the Purpose Quest International Ministry app, please do so. It's free. And I've got about 15 hours of video that is on my app, and we found some things that we had, but we just had forgotten to put up. So I've got a whole 6-part series on finding your purpose. I've got a 5-part series on the Goldmine Principles, 3-part series on creativity, 3-part series on marketing your creativity, 3-part series on publishing a book, a 12-part series on the price of leadership, and then I have 13 preached messages mostly from my church here in Pittsburgh, high quality, high definition, and so that's a ton of stuff. So go to iTunes Store, go to Google Play, go to Amazon Internet, just put in Purpose Quest International, download the app, it's free, and we can stay connected. And so I'm very excited about the app. I'm truthfully surprised more people haven't accessed it. I thought it would just, everybody within the sound of my voice would download the app. But that hasn't been the case, and that's okay. We're going to keep plugging and keep pushing, and it's almost 300 people now, but I'm not near satisfied with that. And so I want more, and if you know me, you know that is sometimes my mantra. All right, before we bring on Father Michael, let's see. We've got a long psalm today, so let me go ahead to Psalm 104. Praise the Lord, my soul. Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty. The Lord wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent and lays the beams of his upper chambers on their waters. He makes the clouds his chariot and rides on the wings of the wind. He makes the winds his messengers, flames of fire his servants. He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved. You covered it with the watery depths as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. But at your rebuke, the waters fled. At the sound of your thunder, they took to flight. They flowed over the mountains. They went down into the valleys to the place you assigned for them. You set a boundary, cross. Never again will they cover the earth. He makes springs pour water into the ravines. It flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. The land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. The trees of the field are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nests. The stork has its home in the junipers. The high mountains belong to the wild goats. The crags are a refuge for the hyrax. He made the moon to mark the seasons, and the sun knows when to go down. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey and seek their food from God. The sun rises and they steal away. They return and lie down in their dens. Then people go out to their work, to their labor until evening. How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. There is the sea, vast and spacious, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things both large and small. There the ships go to and fro, and Leviathan, which you form to frolic there. All creatures look to you to give them their food at the proper time. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are satisfied with good things. When you hide your face, they are terrifying. When you take away their breath, they die and return to the dust. When you send your spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the ground. May the glory of the Lord endure forever. May the Lord rejoice in his works. He who looks at the earth and it trembles, who touches the mountains and they smoke. I will sing to the Lord all my life. I will sing praise to my God as long as I live. May my meditation be pleasing to him as I rejoice in the Lord. But may sinners vanish from the earth and the wicked be no more. Praise the Lord, my soul. Praise the Lord. You know, as I was reading that, I was thinking of Romans 1. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God. Creation testifies to his existence. And the psalmist in 104 certainly had a wonderful handle on God's creation and nature. And you get the sense that the writer spent a little bit of time reflecting on God's creation. Well, that's enough of the introduction. Let me go ahead and bring our guest on for today, Father Michael Pacella. Welcome back to Wake Up to Purpose.
It's great to be here, John. Thank you.
Yep, it's good to have you back. So, Father Michael, you're down in Virginia. How's pandemic progress down there? What's the latest? Are you opening up? Are businesses getting back to normal? What are you seeing?
We just entered the second phase. We were able to go out to lunch with our neighbors today, indoors, very separated in distance, but slowly. But surely things are opening up, and hopefully for church as well. We've been live streaming as well as doing the service on Zoom, but little by little things are opening up.
Yeah. Tell our listeners, I had you on 3 weeks plus ago. Tell our listeners a little bit about Father Michael Pacella, where you've come from, some of your background, and bring us up to date on how you're spending your time these days.
Well, I was born in the projects in Newark, New Jersey. My father was 100% disabled vet. We then moved over to a nearby city, Kearny, New Jersey. I was a troubled youth, didn't have much input from my father. So I volunteered to go into the military at 17. I don't know that it was really voluntarily, but I wasn't really progressing really well. I had a dramatic conversion off the coast of Vietnam. I was on the USS Coral Sea, an aircraft carrier. And I had some fine men, in those days there were only men on ships, 1971, that discipled me. And I began to feel a call of God on my life. I had no high school diploma. I just about got into the military as far as the academic parts. Lost 30 pounds in basic training. But the Lord began to do some great things. My father passed at age 54, which meant that I was a sole surviving son in a war zone, even though I'd completed my tour. And so I came back home, and the Lord just began to open some doors. I went to a nearby church, and I met people who were instrumental in helping me get into college. And the Lord just did some miraculous things. I didn't know how this was going to take place because I had such a deficient background. And that has been part of my life, apart from the wonderful woman that I met. We'll be married 44 years, June 26th, Doreen. And that is certainly the highlight of my life. But the Lord just began to deal with me academically. And so I went to college. It took me 17 years to finish my bachelor's degree. Then I went 8.5 years straight through seminary, postgraduate. I went to Yale, Harvard. And then I did doctoral work. I started to do doctoral work in Cambridge, England. And I'm just completing it here on this hemisphere. And I pastored a church in New London, Connecticut for 20 years, kind of a charismatic evangelical church. I guess I got more in touch with my roots, and I began to move more liturgical when I went back into the military after 23 years, 2 years in the reserves in the Army, and then active duty, Fort Bragg. And I spent a total of 10 years in the military. And while in the military, a lot of things happened for me, physically and also spiritually. I was able to understand the ethos of those that I served with. When I came out, because my bishop wanted me to put a church here in Williamsburg, Virginia, I started to work with the police department. Now, a lot of police officers are retired military, or they have some similar ethos. And so we've been working very hard in academia as well as shepherding a flock here and just been involved in a number of things. With this book, and you're well aware of the years of research, I feel like it's very appropriate for what we're facing right now. It's From Valor to Virtue, the Moral Development of the Brave. I saw a lot of men and women, what we call tabs on their shoulder, great recognitions on the breast of their uniforms. But some of them, unfortunately, were empty shells, and I have a great admiration for the military. I served in two branches. And so I saw a deficiency, even in the police as well. And when you're given a sacred trust from God and people, you have to develop that component that's intangible and which we call virtue. And so my challenge has been to really help them to see that you don't have to be this bad boy without the fear of God and without real internal guts. And so I'm very concerned about what I've seen. But overall, like I said, I have a great admiration and a great identification with both the military and the police department. We have five adopted children. Unfortunately, my one daughter, 24, died 4 years ago. It would have been her 20th birthday yesterday, Allison. And we fostered over 40 children and adopted three from the foster care and then adopted two from private places. And so that's been a big part of our ministry. We've had children from, you know, different races and different things of that nature. And so, you know, I'm here and I'm ready to go, and I hope the Lord will continue to open some doors so that I can bring out this message, and I will share with you more precisely as we go on what are some of the things that I do cover in the material.
Yeah, let's just go back, and I know we talked about this the last time, but you were in ministry. You were a little older when you went back into the military. Talk to us again about that decision, to why you did it, and again, what you learned, what you took away from that when 10 plus years later it ended.
Yes, I was like about 38, 39, and I began to feel a stirring and really a paying back. I mentioned my father was 100% disabled vet, so we lived on, you know, his salary from his benefits. And I had to lose 85 pounds and really get into top physical shape. And, of course, I had to have 90 hours above the bachelor's degree. So I did a 72-hour Master's of Divinity from Yale University Divinity School, and then 48 hours with a THM with Harvard University Divinity School. And the Lord just began to just really challenge me. I had a dear friend. He was an Episcopal priest, charismatic, and he later became a general in the reserves. And he encouraged me, but the Lord was really doing something in my heart. And, of course, you know some of my colleagues. They thought it was a joke. I don't think they really took it seriously. And there were others, because of my academic background, were saying, you know, it's a waste. But I just really felt a call from the Lord. And my wife had never had an exposure other than some people in our church in New London, Connecticut, to the military. So I was very careful to make sure we bought a house and sold our house, although that was a trying time as well. So she didn't have to be put in temporary housing. And the Lord just called me to these people. I left a church that was in very good shape, very healthy, put a pastor in there. I had been there 20 years, probably 150 people. We had a school. We had a worship team of about 14, including singers. We had a building. And so it was really in a good place, but God was moving me on. And, of course, a lot of people felt betrayed, you know, and I just felt like the Lord was calling me to the mission field. And so we went, and I was 43 years old, and the Lord just helped me. One of our first runs with a whole group of people, the Lord just helped me to just stay up with it, and the commander even made a comment. You know, I'd just come off the street, and I was able to, it was like a four-mile run, but later on, we'd even done a nine-mile, you know, with the officers of the brigade. And it was just something the Lord was preparing me for, you know, educationally. And, you know, I had some more liturgical and more sacramental and historical background and understanding from my studies. And the military is quite ecumenical. And so you're working with a lot of different people, and you have to be somewhat open-minded in that way, because you're ministering to a lot of different people and even of different religions. And so I just felt like the Lord wanted me to do that. And like I said, some of my colleagues were not real supportive. They didn't really think it was going to happen. It opened up, and I got called to Fort Bragg, and it was just a glorious experience.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Father Michael Pacella, who now serves as pastor of St. Michael's and All Angels CEC Church in Williamsburg, Virginia, and is also the author of From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave. And let me just say to our listeners, I've known Father Michael for, gosh, 20-plus years, and I've followed his trek to school, to Yale and to Harvard, and then into the military. And it's not like we talked every month, but we would stay in regular contact. And the thing that I've just so appreciated about Father Michael is for all his academic credentials, he's so grounded. I hate to say it like this, but Father Michael, you're normal. I mean, you are accessible. You study. You are learned, and you're passionate about making a difference. And so you come out of the military, and you said your bishop wanted to have you plant or start a church in a Williamsburg area, but you said you got involved with the police department. Why did you do that? What were you hoping to accomplish, and what exactly were you doing?
I miss the military, and it was interesting because at that time we were in the war. My son later served in Afghanistan, but they didn't have enough instructors, and so they asked me to put back the uniform. Simultaneously, I got introduced to the police department, and like I said, many of the police officers were retired military or had prior military service. And again, it was the call that to the men and women of that type of ethos. And so I just, you know, there's a people group that sometimes you feel a call to. I feel a call to the intellectual, but I love the military and I love the police personnel. And because I've worked with them and I feel a part of them, you know, in the Army, you do all the PT, you do everything but shoot. And so I just felt an identity there. I came out of the military. I had an injury. But I know the Lord was calling me, and the bishop wanted to put me in this particular area. And, of course, because of my intellectual, you know, background, I was around the campus of William & Mary. And because of that, I was able, you know, not only to reach out to people, but to get introduced to the chief. And it was interesting because they had a police chaplain who was just leaving shortly thereafter. I had that happen one time when I was a minister of youth in New Jersey. I went there as the Lord called me, and then a few months later, the guy who they thought was going to be there left. And so it was a real nice transition for me, kind of like when I went into the military. I was pastor of the largest African-American gospel service in the Army, and they liked my preaching, and it was a nice transition for me because the Army's a little more structured in the services, but not in the gospel service. So I got introduced, and certainly I want to serve. I felt like the Lord said to me, if you don't serve him, you can't reach him. And so I did my very best to offer my services both to the military and to the police department at that time.
Mm-hmm. So how would you serve the police department? What were you doing?
As a chaplain, and especially let's say we had football games, it would just do like I did in the military when we're out in the field. I want to talk about their particular issues. You know, and as a priest too, they understand our confidentiality and our vow, you know, if there is any confession to be made. So they know they're not going to hear it in a sermon the next week. But I would just care about them. I've always felt like I had a call to what we call the cadre or to the influencers. And so I just want to make sure they're okay, their marriage is okay, whatever problems they might have, you know, building a friendship with them, taking care of them, being a pastor to them. And answering questions, of course, you do a lot of evangelism because sometimes you have academic blocks, you know, to their belief in God. So I always enjoy that as well. But that was my basic thing, just to care for the police officers, help them. I would stand guard with them. The gentleman right now who is our elected sheriff, he and I used to stand guard together at the games. He was a captain. And so it's just been a wonderful time of just caring for people, bringing the church to them, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Now, someplace in there, you started training. How? What was the genesis of that? How did you start to take some of what you had learned and distill it into something that you could offer to these people, this cadre that you felt called to?
Well, in the military, of course, we had a lot of suicides. So I was trained in suicide prevention. So it kind of started there, you know, where I offered that kind of training. But then, you know, I began to, you know, study philosophy, moral philosophy, ethics. My postgraduate degree is in ethics. And I realized these professionals, you know, just like the Hippocratic Oath, you know, you have to have some moral parameters. And so just in talking with them. But then I was teaching a seminary class at our seminary in Maryland, and the bishop heard me, and he said to one of the students who was over the police academy at the University of Maryland, he said, I think you should bring Father Michael into the police academy. So I used to go into the police academy at the University of Maryland, and I taught an eight-hour seminar. And these were recruits. Some of them would be going to D.C., not just for the University of Maryland. And so I began to put these lectures together. You know, 8 hours is a long time. And so that was really the seed form. When I was given that opportunity, a bishop happened to sit in one of my classes on ethics, and he recommended it to one of the, who's now a priest, he's an Orthodox priest, and he asked him if he would please bring me to the police academy and teach. And I did that for many years, and 8 hours. So I was compiling my information, you know, when I began to do that at the University of Maryland.
And you know, you used to tell me about this, and I used to, you know, I knew some of your background and your studies, and I thought, hey, I don't know. I wonder how well it is. Connecting, and or how well Father Michael's connecting with these folks that he's training. And then, I guess about 4 years ago, you gave me the manuscript that you had that was, I guess, based on the trainings that you were doing, that was the seed bed for the book from Valor to Virtue. And when I read it, I just was blown away. It was so good. It was so practical, yet it was so grounded in very solid rationale that was not overly biblical, but it was biblical in the essence of what it was. And so I just read it and said, this has to be put out there. So talk to us about, what do you talk about, ethics? I mean, 8 hours, you just tell people to behave yourself, you know, don't do wrong things, don't steal, you know. What do you talk about for 8 hours? What are you imparting to these trainees and to these enforcement officers, these people in uniform, that pertains to the moral development of the brave?
You'd be surprised that some of the very basic things that you would think that people had from home or from church or from school are not there. I remember having to give a seminar in the Army because there were young ladies that were pretending to be 18 and going to some of these clubs, and some of my soldiers were getting in trouble because they were underage. In the Army, I learned a concept called total fitness. And I always tried to impress on my children not to be one-dimensional. My son was very athletic, very good wrestler, very strong. But just don't concentrate on the physical. And then there are those that are very competent professionally, you know, they're very good at their jobs, but maybe they neglect their health or they neglect their bodies. And then there are those that understand the spiritual intangible components, but all they do is put their heads in the clouds, and they really don't make Christianity into a thinking religion like C.S. Lewis did. And so this concept of total fitness, I try to challenge the cadets with, yes, you must be physically fit. You know, you're going to have to do certain things. You must be professionally competent. But how you're really going to shoot yourself in the foot is if you're ethically deficient. And it's because we can't see that component, they don't work it. Now, I've taught them a lot of different things like, you know, swimming in peanut butter, you know, how it requires constant effort. It's harder to be good than bad. I mean, you know that from child training. I didn't teach my children how to be bad, but I had to teach them how to be good. You know, it's easier to lie than tell the truth. And discipline is required. These people understand discipline. I began to explain to them about the moral terrain, the moral order, the moral landscape. I mean, here they are executing the law, and they need to understand and have a center in their own lives, the need for self-control, the need to be in good physical shape, the need to have an understanding of what it means to work in teams and have partners, and just to understand habituation, what we call in Aristotelian ethics, internalization, practice, being intentional about your discipline. I talked to them, and I was asked many times, please talk to them about integrity and duplicity. You know, in the Army, we throw that word integrity around a lot. Most people don't know what it means. When you talk about an integer, a whole number, or integration, then you can't be two different people. You can't have a public persona and a personal persona. And so that's always a difficulty. So I begin to talk a lot about being integrated and not being duplex, but being one house. Talk about honesty and just limitations, kind of knowing yourself, you know, from Socrates, knowing what you really can deal with. But, you know, when we have teams, for instance, you got to look out for your partner. You know, this incident that just happened, these other guys needed to intercede. And you got to understand what it means to cover one another's back. You know, I was given some training with my karate master, with the military police when I was in the Army. And we were teaching them knife fighting, I've been involved in martial arts some. And so we were teaching them knife fighting, and of course we were teaching them with wooden knives. But the only two, and it was military police battalion, the only two officers that survived were those who fought back to back. And so I just try to teach them to be a team player, teach them about internalization and building good habits intentionally in 21 days or so. Try to talk about people skills being enhanced, clear communication with superiors and with the public, you know, being a peace officer, having a sense of community policing and relationships, you know, the old cop on the beat, you know, when we grew up, and just practicing the golden rule. I try to help them to discriminate between, you know, bad players and actors in history and good players and actors, have a good understanding to discriminate in a good way, and really helping them to learn how to travel on the moral terrain. If you don't understand it because it's intangible, you're not going to be successful. And so I try to teach them about the moral order. Conscience, for instance, if you don't understand the dictates of your conscience. Now, conscience has to be formed. There are some people, and you've seen them in churches legalistically, have deformed consciences. But our consciences have to be formed by the Word of God. Our minds have to be washed with the water of the Word. But there are some people whose consciences are not formed. And so they're not really investing in themselves in this way. So when push comes to shove, you know, I was in Korea for a year unaccompanied. And I've come to see my family after 5 months for a month and went back for 6 months. Now, if you're not practicing moral purity, if you're not living a certain way, when push comes to shove, you're not going to be able to perform. It's the same way lifting weights or a PT test. You know, I had a friend who used to take a PT test every Saturday. When we had the PT test, he always scored 300. And so I try to help them to be in touch with these things and, like I said, with conscience as well and just knowing how to process. For instance, when an officer sees a bad situation like a suicide, we've had several here at the college. And I try to help them to process. You'd be surprised how many officers have a limited faith who believe in God. Even my military people would always allow me to pray for them, no matter how big and bad they were. And so, I mean, when your life's on the line and you can be expected to die at any time. I have a cousin who's a police officer in Chicago and many, many people that I have met. And so I really try to help them to deal with those areas that they need to understand are resident in their lives. Because if they neglect those things, you know, I talked this morning on my little video about rebuilding the trust of the people. And I talked about Nehemiah's wall. But you have to know how far you've deteriorated. You know, we lived through the 60s. I'm a Vietnam vet. And we see what has happened. You know, the scripture says that if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? And so I try to rebuild or build in them. Because with the sacred trust, more is expected of them. There's a higher expectation of their performance. And that's why I think we have to vet better. I think we need to look at highly skilled professionals, people that are morally sound and have a conscience, people that are physically capable or fit. You know, I know sometimes we try to just, you know, hire the muscle people. But I think that there's, you know, there's a overall fitness that one has to have, emotional intelligence and things of that nature. So there are just a few things that I share. Obviously, I also teach this course at a university, but it's a 16-week course. I recently went up to Fairfax, Virginia at a big conference for first responders, and I only had 1 hour. you can believe I prayed about 6 hours, and but it was well received. And so I'm going to be doing one soon. I was just contacted. It'll be 2 4-hour blocks, but there's a lot to cover, and I think the book does a good job in helping people along because they've neglected it so long. You know, some people think that Mother Teresa was a different species and that, you know, we're made to be evil and that we don't have the potential to be good. But if you never work it, it's just like your muscles. If you never work them, you know, think, oh, this person's just a goody two-shoes. No, it's harder to be good than to be bad. So if you neglect that area, you never cultivate virtue. And to cultivate is the same word we use with, you know, civility and civilization. If you don't cultivate, you don't have civility, and we don't have a civilization. And we can see the breakdown of that right now in our culture.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think especially in the evangelical church, we have been so our mindset was, unless somebody's had a conversion experience, they are not capable of doing good. But what I saw and continue to hear from what you're saying is, no, that we can't expect people to hold to a higher standard. We're not denying the conversion experience where somebody would be regenerated and become a new creature in Christ. But that doesn't happen to happen for people to be moral and to be virtuous. Is that an accurate assessment and summary?
Absolutely, John. I taught the laws of war in the Army, okay, the Geneva, the Hague Conventions, and we have an expectation that humankind is capable of being a moral and reasonable being. So absolutely, and you know, of course, the Nuremberg trials, the war crimes, there's this expectation because God didn't make junk. We're made in the image of God. I remember teaching one time, and I tried not to use religious language. And so after I got done with my 4 hours, the head of the police academy came up to me and he says, "You're saying that we can, you know, perform in this manner because we're made in the image of God. Is that right?" And that was exactly, I didn't want to say it. I wanted him to understand we're the higher animals. We have the capacity to reason. We don't just live by instinct, but absolutely. And I think, you know, we kind of downplay our capabilities. Yeah, certainly we have clay feet. Certainly we need God's grace. I mean, I'm sure that you've taken the Myers-Briggs, and I often look at those things and I say, well, that's who I am apart from grace. But nonetheless, we can work it. You know, look at these people with the ultra marathon. Look at these people with several doctoral degrees. I mean, we kind of underestimate what we're capable of doing. And certainly God restores, you know, when we are born again. But there's already good material to work with. And there are people that are atheists that are moral.
Yeah, yeah. How do the people in your training, I'm interested, the law enforcement or any military, how have they responded to you as clergy, as a priest? Do you think it's easier for them to receive from you? Do you think there are barriers? Does it vary? Just what's your experience of how you're received?
In the military, you're a chaplain. You go into the hospital, you don't have to show anything, or you can go anywhere you want to go. So you're kind of in the fabric. Now, when I show up in my clerics and my old black and my cross, and I do have a badge because I'm a police chaplain, there's a little consternation. And so I have to tell them why I'm qualified to teach them ethics, not only educationally, but my experience. And once I do that, there's really no problem at all. You know, I tell them all my background. I mean, you know, I did evangelistic work by going to a martial arts dojang, and I reached out to people, but I had a lot of fights in the process and had some injuries as well. And it's just like Jesus, he put on the uniform. So I think there's authenticity because I was a soldier and I was a part of a police department. And I did things with them, training with them, things of that nature. But at first, they, you know, when they look at you, like, what do you have to tell me? And so I just have to let them know. But the Lord's given me that burden, and I can't change who I am. And I don't try to. As a matter of fact, I was once invited to teach in a business school. And I said, you know, do you want me to wear civilian clothes? Oh, no, no, no. We want a priest. And, you know, it was really interesting because they wanted my perspective, and it was on ethics. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, once I get my little spiel, you know, of who I am and why I'm qualified to teach them and how I appreciate them and want to identify with them, but I think they need to step it up a little, I really haven't had any problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good question.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Father Michael Pacella, who is the pastor of St. Michael's and All Angels CEC Church in Williamsburg, and also the author of a wonderful book titled From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave. Father Michael, let's assume right now we have 100 police chiefs who are listening to this show. And, of course, there's a defund the police movement afoot. And I think everybody would and then there's people on the other side, and I think we would all agree that some change needs to happen. What do you have to offer these 100 police chiefs or public safety directors who are listening today? What advice can you give them of what they can include in their repertoire as they go forward addressing some of the problems that the world has seen?
I would exhort them not to be one-dimensional. I've always encouraged my officers, go to school. You know, you just can't be a physical specimen, you know, with instincts, you know. Develop yourself. And this area, because any police department you go into, they have a code of ethics. And like accountants, you know, like anybody, the Hippocratic Oath. But if you don't emphasize that, and it has not been emphasized, you know, and there's a lot of things that, you know, with them working double shifts and overtime and, you know, changing the hours. But I just don't think they have looked at that as being important. You know, self-control, you know, when to shoot. There's been a lot of different training in that manner. But whether a person's a good person, you know, whether, you know, they're living a double life, you know, what are some issues here? You know, anytime a police officers may be having financial problems or marital problems, this is going to impact their job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you need chaplains. You need someone to attend to their souls. But also, they're just short-sighted, I think. You know, they just think it's important that we have all this tactical training, you know, and all this, you know, professional, maybe, you know, computer and IT stuff now. But there's not a whole lot of emphasis. I've listened to an ethics seminar at a big chaplain's conference, and it was done by a high-level police officer. And somebody must have given him the PowerPoint slides. I'm not being facetious. But he was just going through it. They're not trained or don't have a degree in ethics. I remember when I was in the Army, we had lawyers teaching us legalese more than ethics. They didn't have a degree in ethics, maybe one or two courses. And so I just don't think it's important that you have an honest cop. How do you know? Well, you completely have to learn what Scripture says, like he who steals, steal no more. You know, get a job, work with his hands, and share. Honesty doesn't come because you were told to be honest. It comes when you're constantly being honest, and it becomes second nature. And I just don't think those intangible, unseen things are emphasized. So that's what I would tell them. You know, you're looking for the wrong things. You're not looking for a total person. And that's why you're having some problems.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to that that word that you mentioned, integrity. You know, you brought out in the book the whole point of how some of the law enforcement officers down south in decades gone by were also members of the Klan. I mean, that's part of why, mm-hmm. you know, the hoods were worn, so they could hide their identity.
Sure.
And that's an issue. That's a problem. But we haven't always thought it's a problem. And so, like you said, we've emphasized marksmanship, we've emphasized tactical sophistication, but we just don't really believe that that these issues can be imparted, that they can be taught. I wanted to mention we've got about 5-6 minutes. You said we've got to do a better job of vetting, you know, and our pay is limited. Again, there's lots of pressure in the job. I mean, can we really find these people who are willing to be people of integrity, who will not just be valorous but can also be virtuous? Is that realistic?
Yes, and especially people who have been in the military, they have a great work ethic. And I wrote down here, better trained and highly paid. In other words, make it difficult to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be highly trained, and there are other aspects, psychological aspects, you know, character aspects. Now,
mm-hmm.
look, I don't believe in the zero tolerance. You know, when I was in the Army, you know, everybody has this holier-than-thou attitude. Oh, you know, you did something wrong once. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank God the Lord's not that way. Do you think that we need highly skilled? We need them to understand they're professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you know, if you have to, you know, do a takedown and bring me down because I'm resisting, fine. But in the interim, and there's a lot of them that do this, you have to be a gentle person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be morally sound. You have to have a conscience. You know, you have to be cultivating certain things, even, you know, your own family life. You know, very high divorce rate in the military and on the police force. And there are a lot of factors for that. But so I do think that we have to make it a little more competitive, and it's just not the one-dimensional. You know, remember, I was in a fraternity, and I recommended one guy because we had a bully in school, and this guy was the youngest brother of several older brothers. And, you know, he beat this guy up, you know, in the gym locker room. And so when we were recommending, you know, I said, oh, yeah. And I said, Bernie, he's a good fighter. You know, and I was, oh, you know, and so that was the thing. He was a good guy. He really was a nice guy. He just got tired of seeing this guy bullying everybody. But I think we, you know, look at a guy, like you mentioned, marksmanship, and you look at a guy, you know. I know my son has got a tender heart. He's a tender warrior. He was with Special Forces and Navy SEALs. He was infantry, Army, but he traveled with them, operated with them in Afghanistan. And we have to cultivate virtue, compassion, as well as someone who's strong and someone, you know, is a good shot. If you have somebody, you know, in a playground shooting children, you need a sniper who can take
mm-hmm.
that person out, you know, and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So, yeah, I do think that we have to make it a more desirable. And the pay scale is so poor, and what they expect, but that just shows our culture. You pay
mm-hmm.
the athletes all this money, and even the doctors, and even, you know, the Hollywood crowd, and these people are not paid for the heroic work that they get. And I think we need to, you know, they talk about defunding all they want, but who's going to want to do that job? And my cousins told me you get spit in the face, you get cursed at, you know, and I know, you know, these are the types of things. And just because there's a few bad, you know, just like there are a few bad priests and teachers who have had relations, you know, with their students, doesn't mean to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to say to listeners, you know, we when we put the book together, we put the Bible verses in an appendix. So they're there, but we didn't. Father Michael did not want them to be filtered through the manuscript so that it became a preaching session. It's not. This book, From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave, is content that's based in study of ethics, philosophy. It is certainly on a biblical foundation. You will see that in the appendix, but chose not to put it in throughout the manuscript. Did I summarize that again correctly, Father Michael?
Absolutely. And, you know, with your encouragement, and like I said, a lot of military people and officers that I know have a faith in God, so they would appreciate that substantiation. But I want it to be for everyone. And, you know, I taught Confucius, for instance, in one of the courses I taught in the university. And there's a lot of principles, and we say in philosophy and theology, all truth is God's truth. Mm-hmm. And so what I've tried to do it in a subliminal way, help them to see the decency for civility, or what's necessary for civility, through the moral philosophy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've done an excellent job. And you did say you had some training coming up, so you did have a police department get in touch with you, and they want to have you come in. Is that correct?
That is correct. And my bishops encouraged me to expand it more, and that's why I contacted you. And hopefully, you know, their fiscal year from July to July. And so I'm getting it prepared to do that. And hopefully God will open some more doors so we could be proactive and help during this time.
Indeed. And From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave is available through Amazon. Father Michael Pacella, again, if you go to the page for this episode on Blog Talk Radio, the link is included in the title of the book. You just click on that, and it'll take you right to where you need to go. Father Michael, you're the right man with the right message in the right place at the right time, and so we just really pray that God will continue to open doors. You have prepared. You've done what you can do, and now we are counting on God doing what He can do. And may many hear what you're saying, and may it open many doors for you to make an impact for many, many years to come. So thank you again for being a guest on Wake Up to Purpose, and we're going to have you back again.
Thank you so much. John, I do have a website for the book. Could I do that quickly? Or
sure.
HTTP:// From Valor to Virtue, one word, no spaces, From Valor to Virtue.com.
Great. From Valor to Virtue.com. Order a copy of the book. Order 10 and give it to some of the law enforcement in your community. Give it to people in leadership, and seed your community with this understanding that we expect morality and ethics from those who wear a badge and carry a gun, and it is attainable and accessible. Father Michael, thank you. Love your family. God bless you. You know we'll be talking soon.
Thank you, John. God bless you, too.
Bye now. Bye-bye. All right, Father Michael Pacella, again, www.fromvalor2virtue.com. Order a copy of the book, and I'm saying order 5. And give it to take it to the police station. Give it to people who are in a position who need to read this, and it can make a difference. Well, we'll be back on Monday. We will be 5:00 on Monday. I have Proverb Newsom, who is a program director at Urban Youth Impact down in West Palm Beach. Well, next Wednesday, we're going to have my friend Glimina Quirk from South Africa. He'll be on. But in the meantime, this is John Stanko, your host. Until we're together again, you'll be about the work of purpose. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.